In the studio, I've got Crystal from the Karioi Project. Morning.
Good morning.
Nice day out there, isn't it?
It's awesome. Yeah.
Is this a bit, but you do mostly office work and you're rolling the job. Do you get stuck inside while all the volunteers are out on the mountain?
Yeah, it can be a bit like that. But I was on the mountain yesterday and Sunday, so
okay.
Pretty lucky when I get a day out in the field a week.
One day a week, yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I don't know whether this counts as an office job or what. What I'm doing, I mean, I'm sitting down, but
a little bit of both.
Yeah, I mean, I do office-y things. Actually, my job's a bit like yours sometimes. I'm doing all the admin, making sure the funding's in.
Yeah, I try not to do the admin. I do have an administrator.
Oh,
she's way better at that than me.
Yeah, do you want to help us out? I would love to have an administrator too, but yeah. We're a smaller organisation.
Yeah,
than
yeah,
you. Yeah,
yeah.
So we always talk about how the oi is doing, the grey-faced petrel. Chicks are in nests at the moment, are they? Or
yeah.
Are they growing? What's the story?
Yeah, so they in burrows and we've had a few nests. Yep. But yeah, they are deep down in the ground, you know, and sometimes quite deep burrows, like several meters deep, and some of them a bit more shallow.
Yeah.
But we've had an exciting kind of month, really. We had Meadow, the species dog here, who sniffs out. It's a new dog, actually, because we always used to have Rua, but now Joe's training up a new dog.
Yeah.
And he did really well. Beautiful dog, just really good already. 2 years old and sniffing out these burrows, and found us some new burrows. And we also found a bunch of little blue penguin back nesting.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And one baby in the burrow, one that we saw, but there will be others as well.
So do we know how many oi chicks we've got, first of all?
We from what we can gather, about 16.
Okay.
So one of our best years. I mean, we have had that many before, but then we've had a stoat or a ferret come in and we've lost them. Sometimes around this time of year.
Lost many of them, not all of them.
Not all of them, no, but half of them.
Mm, so that could potentially still happen.
It can still happen because the stoats start running at this time of year where they've fledged a nest and little young ones are out and about.
Oh, yeah.
So, so we're on high alert and checking the burrows lots, checking traps lots, and also just raising awareness to people on the beach and living on our coastal kind of areas. That we've got these little blue penguin waddling up the beach at night, you know, to come in and feed their chicks. And
so their nests are really vulnerable, eh?
Super vulnerable, but they're often in areas that you don't even think anything would be there. So, like, you know, on the southern end of the beach and around Manu Bay and between the beach and Manu Bay, those areas that often,
on the rocks,
you know, getting smashed by high high tides and storm surges and that, and then you've got areas where there's pampas coming down and there's quite a lot of erosion, but out in the back of those areas you'll have little blue penguin making burrows. So often their burrows are not permanent sites, so they'll make new burrows, or sometimes we'll see them there, they'll fledge some chicks, and then maybe the next year the burrow gets washed out and they'll come back a year or two later and we'll see them again.
Okay.
So
is this
it's really
to be,
exciting to see them back.
Is this likely to be the same ones that were here a couple of years ago?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So they'll have their little kind of roosting sites. And then also with little blues, once they've fledged some chicks, they also have a molting phase where they on land and they can't go back to water. And so they're especially vulnerable then. And especially like the little dogs. I mean, any dog, you know, and any predator can be a threat.
Yeah.
Anything that burrows or predates, so it can be stoats and cats, dogs, pigs, anything, you know, that can get at them. And so they're super vulnerable and they sit in these burrows and can get just easily dug up. And little dogs can get into the burrows as well, and that makes them even more dangerous.
You talk about the penguins molting and not being able to go to the water. I remember being somewhere in the South Island years ago and we're just walking along and all of a sudden there was a penguin just standing there molting, doing nothing.
Mm.
And it didn't do anything, just stood there. Didn't try to get away from us or anything. And it was a slightly surreal experience. It was a wild animal that didn't try and run away. So, how vulnerable is that?
Really vulnerable. And, I mean, they're beautiful. They're the smallest penguin in the world. And they're only 500 grams, which is like, you know, a block of butter. Like, it's mostly, crazy how light they are.
Are they mostly feather?
Yeah, really feathery. And
also, how high are they, when they stand, how tall are they?
Yeah, they're only like that.
So
like
you're showing me 25 centimetres.
One and a half hand lengths.
Yeah, we're getting like 25 centimetres there, less than a foot.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, I was at the kind of little marine museum aquarium in Napier the other day, and they had some that they'd rescued and that were swimming around. So it was quite cool seeing them swimming around and having a close-up look.
I didn't realise they were that small, actually. I don't remember you telling me that before. So
Yeah. So that's an added bonus. Just, you know, we're obviously protecting the grey-faced petrels and we know that they're there. But the little blues are actually more threatened in terms of the numbers that are still out there. And, and so it's just the result of the protection that some of the coastline is getting.
Yeah.
And the more we do, the more birds we'll see back. And it's the same on the mountain, like, up there yesterday and just, you know, the bird life, especially in that eastern area where we're doing most of our work with the bait stations, the bird life's just amazing.
You can hear it.
You can hear it all day.
So if you did a walk over the mountain, the right on the right parts of it, would you notice the difference?
On the traverse, we call it, you know, when you go from the Ruapoki side to Te Toto, it can get a bit more quiet. I think that the area, that eastern block, kind of the 500-odd hectares that we're doing really intensely, will be benefiting the smaller birds.
So the eastern side is the Hamilton side?
The side that is kind of facing town and then curving round to the south, you know, so that...
So the inland side?
Yeah, the inland side.
Heaps of... So I'm always... focused on the oi, and they're on the cliffs or around the sea edge.
Yeah.
So I always thought it was around there.
We're doing heaps of stuff around the coast as well, but that's interspersed between the houses and residential area. So we obviously go all the way from the pine trees at the mountain bike park all the way across the reserves and working with landowners right through to indicators. And then we've obviously got our stoat trap lines right across the mountain, like all the way, you know, all around. So there's about 12, 13 lines. But then we've got a block of about 500 hectares that's kind of between Upper Wainui kind of area and then all around to Sweetman's, which is we're nearly at the entrance to, you know, the Ruapoki end of that side of the mountain. So that kind of block... which is what we call the eastern block.
Mm.
That's the area where we're doing some of our most intense work. Lots of trapping and really tightly gridded bait stations as well.
So that's you're next to farmland there?
Yeah, next to farmland, yeah.
So how does that affect it?
The farmland?
Yeah, like presumably, I mean, there's no fence, right? It's not like Mangatautri.
Oh, there's not. Yeah, well, there's a stock fence.
There's a stock fence. Yeah, that doesn't stop stoats and rats.
Yeah. So what we're having to do is, you definitely, the impact is from what we call an edge effect. So the more edges, the more vulnerable you are to reinvasion. Yeah. So we work together with regional council. They come in several, after a couple of years, every couple of years, when the possum numbers around those kind of fringes and those farm blocks get higher, they'll come in and do a bait station operation as well on private land.
Yeah.
And then we're focusing on those edges and then the actual forest block. So we've kind of been working in there for the last year and a half and really starting to see an improvement now, just birds coming back and getting the possum numbers down. So we're down to about 10% on our monitoring.
Of what it was?
No, 10% total, like our monitoring, like a tracking rate, kind of what we call it. So that means, like, you know, you might have had 100% possums. Like, so when you're
monitoring,
so you'd be catching possums, like every trap or every line you'd set out, you'd catch pretty much a possum.
Right, that's when you know you're inundated.
Yeah, out of every 100 traps or out of every 10 to 20 monitoring sites, we'll only get one or two.
Yeah.
So that kind of gives us an indication of the numbers that we're looking at.
Mm.
So we're around 10% and what we're aiming for is less than 5. But those last ones are the hardest to get. So we're doing lots of work around the boundary. So with your question around how does the farmland affect it,
yes, yeah.
is that often possums will come out at night and feed on the grass. So we kind of think they're always tucked up in the trees, but they come down, eat, feed on the grass. And so doing the edges is really important, and that's where we catch a lot of our possums.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, as we're doing that work, we're also doing the rats, but the rats are still taking a bit more work.
Are the possums omnivorous?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they eat the eggs and...
Yeah, they'll eat eggs. They'll eat anything, you know. So, but obviously, you know, big herbivores as well, and they really impact on the trees. And, yeah, so getting those numbers down has been a challenge, but really exciting to see what it takes for us to do that. And it's been a massive effort from the community as well. And we're getting, because it takes another whole level of volunteers to have those bait station days, filling bait stations, cleaning bait stations.
Yes.
So we've had up to 30 people sometimes per day that we're doing that come out, and we get people out from Hamilton and lots of volunteers from Raglan as well. So
right.
it's been like really exciting bit of work. Obviously,
and you can see the difference that it's making.
Oh, yeah. So, we'll start to see more and more of a difference the more spring seasons we get through. So, next year we'll hopefully see an even bigger difference. But it's especially when you're targeting those, like, rats and possums, you'll start seeing a really big increase in the smaller birds.
Yeah.
Yeah, bellbirds and fantails, but also kereru and ruru and that, and it'll... You know, bats, any bats that we've got around will benefit. Whereas the ferret work and the stoat work that we're doing is especially for your bigger birds.
We always talk about the oid, like it's the poster bird for the whole thing.
Yeah.
But and the blue penguins come back. Are there other species that have come back?
It's hard to say if they've come back unless we've really monitored them well.
Yeah.
What we do is we do general bird surveys, so we kind of, you know, bird counts, and we've put a kind of, what do you call them, like bat detectors out.
Okay.
So we know there's bats all around the mountain and around town and forest areas, like small, you know, patches of forest and people's backyards, basically.
Okay.
So we know they're there, whether, you know, and it's much harder to, unless you're looking at breeding sites and nesting success and that, it's really hard to say, yes, we've made a difference. But you can, in general, you do get that kind of anecdotal evidence just from people reporting back, seeing also more kaka and around town. People tend to kind of call us or email us, or they'll send a photo and say, hey, look what I saw.
Yeah.
You know, so in general, you'll see an increase and an improvement in what we've got. And then those bird counts kind of, I guess, you know, kind of let us know that we're not imagining it, that the birds are up there.
Wishful thinking. Hey, on different topics, you guys have a kids program and you've got a summer thing happening with kids. Are you able to talk about that?
Yeah. We've actually got a little crew, Karioi Rangers, going out tonight and spending a night on the mountain.
Oh, okay.
Overnight camping out in the secret spot in the back of beyond.
Yep.
So that'll be fun, making their own huts to sleep in. So, so that's Karioi Kids and Rangers. So they're wrapping up in the next couple of weeks, so that's our after school program. And then we've got a holiday program starting as soon as school's out, and so that'll run for a couple of weeks before Christmas and then for several weeks after Christmas as well in January.
Okay, and what sort of things will the kids be doing?
Oh, they do a whole bunch of things, like from, you know, bush stuffing, learning new skills, you know, they sometimes go trapping and do all sorts of things, but they also do just lots of outdoor adventures and water play and, you know, heading out to the beach. And
so what ages are we talking about?
It's from 7 to, 7 years age to 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
And for people, we've talked about volunteers and things. If people want to get involved, how do they do that?
They can find us on our website or Facebook page or Instagram.
Okay.
Just send us a message.
Always looking for volunteers?
Yeah. We've definitely had to have a big push because of the extra work that we're doing now for more volunteers.
Yeah.
But we obviously also have trap lines to check all the time. And so that's regular work, like that you can do once a month or once a fortnight or once a week, depending on how keen you are. And we can match people to their fitness level. Yeah. And we're definitely noticing that we're needing a few more volunteers because more people are traveling again. And so, you know, some of our regular volunteers are going away and they might need a break for a month or two. So it's really handy to have people that just know a few of the trap lines and can fill in sometimes or be backup buddies.
Yeah.
And we've got a crew of seabird, well, we call them burrow buddies. So that's for all our seabird monitoring.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got heaps of opportunities to do either one-off or, you know, regular kind of volunteering. And we're always keen for volunteers that can help with any event stuff or fundraising as well. So if you've got skills that you'd like to contribute, we're really happy to hear from you.
Okay. And what was the other thing I was going to ask about trapping at home? Because this is something that's serious now. You've got people all around town trapping.
Yeah, we've got about 450 families trapping. Yeah, which is awesome, and that includes also bigger, you know, block owners and people that are replanting their farms or their, you know, backyards and putting traps in at the same time. So that's really exciting, and yeah, anyone can get a trap and for a small fee, and we'll show you how to use it, and we'll show you where to put it, and give you support along the way. And we've also got a paid service that if you want traps in your backyard and you want someone to come and check them for you, we've often got young guys that have come out of our education program that like to get some extra work.
Yes.
So we kind of create it as an employment opportunity as well. So we'll definitely be pushing for that more next year again as well, just getting more people trapping in their own backyard. This time of year, sometimes you don't see the rats in that as much around
because they're
house,
out outside the house.
Out and about.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's really good to keep trapping over summer just as that autumn invasion will come in again.
Mm.
Yeah.
Are there any areas that you feel like you've got any weaknesses in the trapping network that you really want to sort out at the moment?
Yeah.
You're focused on?
Yeah, we always got weaknesses. Oh,
yeah. Sorry, just one. Just give us one. Give us the most urgent one.
Yeah, well, probably one of our biggest challenges is if you're controlling rats, you just need to have a really dense network. So the more housing we have, the more challenging it becomes.
Yeah.
And the other challenge is catching ferrets. They're just so elusive. We've seen them on our monitoring cameras, but we're struggling to catch them. So that's been one of our biggest challenges. We're constantly trying new traps or new cage traps to see if we can catch more of them.